Minneapolis, Denver, New York City, Oakland, Atlanta, Washington, D.C., Louisville, San Jose, Des Moines, Detroit, Salt Lake City, and the list goes on. These are just some of the cities that have experienced protests in the past week, and George Floyd's murder and murder porn video was one of the catalysts for these protests. Let's be clear, sooner or later, this was going to happen. Things are not okay in America, and America's continuing issue with race inequality and the routine acceptance of the mistreatment of Black people and other people of color have come to a head in the last couple of weeks. Then we had Amy Cooper in New York City calling the police on Christian Cooper unnecessarily during a normal incident that plays out all the time, annoying people with their dogs off leash. That one call could have resulted in Christian Cooper's death. In this episode, I'm going to get candid about race in America, money and opportunity, and what's next. This is a very difficult show for me to do because I have so many thoughts racing through my mind. The goal of this episode is to give a better perspective of what people are angry about and to leave you, the listener, with ideas of how we can collectively do better. And honestly, I have to say something about this. And just so you know, this is not the first time that I've talked about race and wealth in America on my website and podcast, but it has been a while that I've done it in this way. Buckle up. Thank you for listening to Michelle is Money Hungry. I'm your host, Michelle Jackson, empowering people with money one conversation at a time. So this is winning. We are not winning in the United States and haven't been for many years. The fact of the matter is America at its core is dysfunctional and its dysfunction is currently on display and I'm here for it. America is an incredibly wealthy country. It is considered a land of great opportunity and compared to other countries, this can be the case. We even had a private company launch US-based astronauts over the weekend into space via the SpaceX launch run by an immigrant, the always slightly crazy Elon Musk. But with all that wealth, we also have a huge problem with wealth distribution. Schools are unequal, lack of access to affordable healthcare across the board, a constant threat of danger due to gun-related violence. Access to good paying jobs is decreasing as businesses move manufacturing offshore. And Americans also focus on the individual versus the collective. And that affects everything related to creating policies for citizens. Then you add racism to the mix and you've got a dangerous situation. I would like to paraphrase a couple of things that I've heard several times during the past week about the George Floyd protests. And before I move further, I'm not editing this episode, so sorry. So I'm paraphrasing two things that I keep hearing over and over again. The first one is, why are people looting? They're tearing up businesses and their own town. Why can't they protest without damaging property? Why can't the protesters why can't they do it differently and safe and, you know, why can't they do it the way that I want them to do it, is the underlying sentiment. The other thing I've heard is this, George Floyd is just one man. I get that this was horrible, what happened to him, but to riot and burn down your own town for one person makes no sense. Protest as a verb is defined as the ability or the willingness to express an objection to what someone has said or done to you via the online dictionary. I would like to point out several really important things to consider about those two comments. First, Colin Kaepernick quietly protested by kneeling for years to protest Black people getting shot by the police. He lost his livelihood, was ridiculed, was blacklisted from a career that he could actually still be playing right now. He could be playing football. He could be the quarterback for the Denver Broncos, who needed a really good quarterback for the last couple of years, but I'm not going to go down that road. My point is, he didn't shout. He didn't break anything. He just quietly took the knee wearing his afro. And he was told that he was protesting the wrong way, which is really ironic when you think about it, because now everyone's like, why are you writing? Shouldn't you be catching yourself on that? Like, did you also say that he was protesting the wrong way? So what is the right way? That man quietly took a knee for years, lost everything. And you're now saying that maybe that was the way he should have been protesting to begin with. Instead of police unions connecting with him and talking to him and collaborating and trying to move the situation forward, instead he was vilified and made a pariah outside of Black circles. Black people didn't do that to him. It's 2020. There's video for everything, stupids. While there are protesters looting, there are also groups of random white people who seem organized and are tearing up buildings during the actual protests. Now, I'm not saying that protesters aren't doing the same thing, but I am saying that there is clearly an organized effort to make this worse, to make the situation worse. And there's video. It's not like I'm guessing here. I'm like, I've actually seen more than one piece of footage across the U.S. where this is the case. So that makes me want to bring up a story. There was a protester, a demonstrator here in Denver, where they were in front of the Denver's Capitol, and this guy was spray painting the Indian statue in front of the Capitol. And the black protester said, "Dude, this isn't about that. Like, this is about George Floyd. We are protesting about what happened to him. Why are you tearing up that statue? It makes you look stupid." Okay. So my whole point of bringing up this story is I think it's going to be really easy for people to have this idea that protesters are like tearing everything up and all this stuff, but it's more gray. It's not black and white. That is one of many stories that I've heard and seen. Likewise, there are protesters who are tearing shit up. Let's be clear. But I want to make that point, but that there's a gray area. Third, why were people more concerned about the treatment of the dog in the Amy Cooper video, the woman in New York City who called the cops on the black birder? Like, how white is that habit, birding? Like, I'm all about birding when I'm like 67. But anyway, I'm joking, but seriously, he's a birder. She called the cops on him in something that is ridiculous. Like, everyone gets into conversations or slight conflicts about those assholes who have their dogs off leash. It's not an unusual thing for this kind of thing to come up. And Amy Cooper basically called the cops on Christian Cooper, who is a U.S. citizen and a human being, and he could have been killed due to her actions. Fourth, if the public at large values dogs and buildings more than my black life, that's something we need to reflect on. Think about that. If your reaction was, "Oh my God, I can't believe there's like she's totally strangling that dog." If that was the first thing you thought of, no. Seriously? What do you think about my life? What do you think about his life? He could have died. And sadly, someone did die that week because the police were called on them for some ridiculous thing, you know? It's not just about George Floyd. These protests aren't just about him. The protests are about more than that. The murder of that man, of George Floyd, was the catalyst for something that has been coming for a while, but people just weren't paying attention. The protests are about the following, because I want to say it in the present tense, they are about the following things. The ongoing acceptance of Black people being murdered by the police and other people on camera and getting away with it. That's bullshit. And we're not going to take this anymore. And in case you're not clear about what Black citizens have been killed for, I'm going to share a very short list. It's actually much, much longer, but I'm going to share just a few things that people have been killed for. And yeah, you're going to be like, "Huh, I didn't realize that." Jogging, that happened like a month ago. Sleeping. Driving, someone else walking into our apartment, that happened in Texas, walking home with candy after popping into the store, Trayvon Martin, looking scary because you have a hoodie, shopping. I mean, have you ever worried that you would die because of those actions? Like, that's not okay. Black people accounted for 31% of police killing victims in 2012, even though Black people make up 13% of the United States population. That's not okay. Lack of opportunity in a land of plenty. That's what people are upset about. Deepening poverty. That's what people are upset about. The almost daily rhetoric and actions taken by the current administration to systematically eliminate people's rights. And I want to just let you in on a little secret. Just because you try to eliminate my rights, like say you effectively eliminate a right that I have, sooner or later that affects your rights, stupids. Like I'm completely fascinated by this because people think that it only affects other people, but it always affects everyone. So if you're cutting, you know, you're trying to eliminate voters' rights, sooner or later that affects your right to vote. And a good example with that is vote by mail. I have been voting by mail for 6 years. It is glorious for so many reasons. Okay. It is not filled with fraudulent, you know, votes. And in fact, the president has voted by mail, as has his press secretary, who has voted by mail 11 times. So if it's good enough for them, why isn't it good enough for the rest of us? Have you ever asked yourself that question? Basically, people are really fed up with everything. Then added to this anger is the anger associated with the coronavirus response. It has not escaped my attention that the moment the talking points were that Black, brown, and old people were the individuals most likely to die from the virus, that the conversation about it changed. It felt like people were willing to sacrifice me and mine so they could get their haircuts. And honestly, your hair wasn't that cute to begin with. And that just feels shitty. I work for myself from home, but many people of color work in the following ways: in concessions, restaurant work, as guards, in retail, as cashiers in factories, on the floor in factories, Amazon workers, Walmart, places like that. Basically, these are people who work hard at jobs that require constant interaction with other people, thus increasing the likelihood of them being exposed to the virus. But those are also the jobs that people have lost because sporting events, restaurants, and retail won't rebound for years to come. You can't convince me that they will, even after a vaccine. 40 million freaking people have lost their jobs, and over 100,000 people have lost their lives. As I watched the protests, several questions came to mind about the people who were protesting. Who knew someone who had suffered at the hands of the police? And was it the actual protester themselves? Who had lost a job because of the virus, and they were protesting because they had nothing else to lose? Who knew someone who had died because of the virus or had gotten sick with lifelong physical and financial repercussions? I saw a report today as I record this of a person who received an $850,000 medical bill for keeping them alive during their fight against COVID. Who had experienced being roadblocked professionally because of the color of their skin? And who in the crowd protesting had health insurance? Definitely not the 40 million people who had lost their jobs, because most jobs and most health insurance is connected to your job. I wasn't just looking at the screen and seeing people that I didn't know and couldn't feel empathy for. I got it. I 100% get their anger because I share their anger. And I want to share a brief glimpse into my experience being Black in America. I will also share some other people's experiences as well. Every year, I have at least a minimum of two incidents of white women clutching their purses when I walk nearby them. Even when I have a giant purse on my shoulder, I almost always have a giant purse, okay? And I almost always have a really pretty, cute, giant purse. I dress up and people freak out when they see me and they clutch their purses. It's been going on forever. It's really annoying. It's a microaggression and it's annoying. It's really annoying. Always hold your purse tight if you're worried about someone stealing your purse, okay? I've had people ignore me when I'm talking to them, blatantly. The last time it really happened badly was when I was at a reunion for a program that I did called Up With People, and the reunion was held in Arizona, in Tucson. And I've actually actively boycotted Arizona most of my life because of how Arizona was about Martin Luther King's holiday and divesting out of South Africa during the apartheid movement. How that state was really was like left an impression on me as a very young person. So I'm there and I'm talking to someone who is, or I'm with a friend and someone was engaging with us, but they would not, every time I spoke, they looked through me. I'll never forget it. My friend's like, dude, what's the deal with that person? And I was like, I know what the deal is. So yeah, I've had that happen. And it's happened more than once, but that was the last time it's happened. And that was about 4 years ago. I've been roadblocked for promotions and told by more than one director of the program that I worked for that they didn't feel comfortable with me representing the program abroad. Now, I should also asterisk that with they didn't want me blocking their opportunities. However, one person for sure, it was because I was Black. The other person, they're ambitious, but still. I've been followed in grocery and clothing stores, especially when I was younger. It doesn't seem to happen as much now because I don't go to grocery stores or clothing stores that often unless I know the people, and partly because I don't need the hassle. And online, I've been ignored when I was flagging down a cab. Do you know why I like ride shares? Because it's very hard to ignore people when you're on a ride share app. I've been called the N-word. I've been referenced as the angry Black woman. And for those of you who know me, I know that's probably a shock to you. I have a file with all the details related to my ability to vote legally. And I am obsessive about this. Why? Because a key part of the Voting Rights Act was invalidated in 2013, and also because jurisdictions are trying to levy poll taxes in order to be eligible to vote. And also, I'm looking at you, Florida, with that one. And also because of how fearful people are to allow fair and equal access to the right to vote, and how hard they are working to suppress people's votes. Like the harder people try to suppress their votes, the harder, the more I vote and the more I am attentive to that right. If you're listening to this and you've been like on the fence about voting, hearing how hard people are working to keep you from doing it should make you understand how important that right is. I would love to get married and have two adorable little boys who look like their dad, who I haven't met yet. But I'm afraid of having little boys that other people feel free to harass and kill. I'm going to keep it 100. It terrifies me. Depending on the situation, I'm very uncomfortable when police are around, and I hate it when they drive near me when I'm driving. I really hate driving and having police near me. The last thing I want to deal with is any interaction with the police. I just don't want to, I don't trust them. And that's a shame because technically they are supposed to protect and serve. Like that's part of their mantra. And I don't trust them. It doesn't mean that on an individual basis, I don't have nice conversations or fun interactions or whatever. But as a collective, the police are problematic for me because I don't trust that I'm safe around them. And I will also say, I have people in my family who serve in the military who've also been officers of the law of some sort. So it's not like I don't know people who aren't of service in that way. My point is I don't feel secure around them because all of these situations make me nervous. Do you blame me? I worry about my Black male relatives, male friends, and their male kids, and likewise my Latin friends, right? They have the same kind of issues. Plus, the like push to deport everybody. It is normal for people of color to have a conversation with their children, in particular their male children, about the fact that people will view them as threatening and that the police are unlikely to protect them and more likely to hurt or kill them because they are seen as a threat at a young age. Okay, at a young age. My experience is nothing compared to what my other friends and family members have dealt with. Like my experience of being Black in America has been hard, but it's nothing compared to the stories that I know from other people. And I have to ask the question, why is it that my full equality as a United States citizen is perceived as a threat to your equality? Like it makes no sense. I'm gonna ask that again. Why is it that my full equality as a United States citizen is perceived as a threat to your own equality? America will never be a great country. America will never be as great a country as it could be as long as the following remains true. The lack of willingness to have candid and painful conversations about race and inequality. Our unwillingness to have these conversations keep us from truly knowing one another. We don't know each other's, we have an idea of like each other's fears and concerns, but we don't know each other on a one-on-one basis if we're not having these kinds of conversations. Talked to my mom before recording this episode, and I brought up South Africa's Truth and Reconciliation program where they basically shared everything. And I cannot imagine how painful that was for them after the end of apartheid to have this series of conversations about apartheid and about how that system was and about how certain people did certain things and just getting it all out there. And as long as America refuses to do the following, to admit that enslaving people for, you know, all the hundreds of years that they did was wrong, that we have a right to want to be financially compensated because you got a lot of free work off of people. Hello. That reparations are, there's a reason why we're bringing this up, because if you look at all the statistics related to building personal wealth in America for people of color, especially Black people, it's abysmal. As I record this, this is on the anniversary of the Tulsa race riots, where basically white people burnt down Black Wall Street. It was the most thriving and financially robust corner of the United States for Black people, in addition to New York City. And they burnt it down because people were doing well. So when we say that we're mad and we're frustrated and that we want equality, this is a long conversation. This has been happening for more than one generation, okay? Lack of access to quality healthcare. This one really pisses me off, to be honest. Like, it makes no sense. It makes no sense that we are so reluctant to allow people just access to the ability to care for their health. The continuing growth and the divide between the haves and have-nots, lack of access to fair and equal ways to vote, inadequate education and access to education that's not equivalent to other people's education. We accept unequal treatment of citizens by people in positions of authority. That's problematic. And those who benefit from a position of power don't stand up for what's right. So this is a lot of what is pissing people off. I need you to check your privilege. And by the way, this comment is directed not only to white people, but also other people of color as well, or rather also to people of color who are doing well. Another person's success doesn't endanger yours. It benefits you. I live in a nice neighborhood. During the coronavirus outbreak, which is still happening as I record this, and quite frankly, is going to rebound like a mother after all the protests. Anywho, I would walk around the neighborhood during the start of the outbreak when we were first asked to quarantine. No one looked stressed. People were exercising. They were riding their bikes and spending time with their kids. Most of the people in my neighborhood work white collar jobs, and let's be candid, they are white too. They were having a very different experience of the coronavirus situation than other people that I know. They were still getting paid to work or were able to work from home. They had some resources available to them that ensured that they would be able to take care of their personal expenses, such as, you know, mortgage, rent, what have you, food. Maybe not indefinitely, but they had some resources. I heard or saw conversations where people were like, yeah, you know, I want to purchase a property now because it would be a great time to do so. I've heard a lot of conversations about that. And I understood that other people just were like, we just want a roof over our head and we're really afraid. People in my neighborhood clearly had access to the internet and could continue to educate their kids via online learning, take fitness classes, and order food and clothing instead of going into grocery stores, which would, by doing that, ordering online, lowered their possibility of being exposed to the virus. I am also including myself in those observations. I am checking my own privilege that I've worked really hard to achieve, but I have to share that as well, that I experienced that too. However, as I improve my life, I can't lose sight of how important it is to help other people along the way. There is a reason why I'm so passionate about sharing personal finance content and how people can empower themselves making money selling what they already know. What is my success if other people are still suffering? So here are some things that we can do. And there's a lot that we can do to better this situation. I don't want you to be like, damn, Michelle, like, this is so heavy. This is so much. Well, yeah, it is. Get over it. It is heavy. But imagine living like we do with a constant threat and slight paranoia and just stress. How do you think that is? How do you think that makes me feel? Do you know why I like hiking so much? Because I'm constantly, besides like that, I like nature, but it's constantly checking with myself and working on managing my well-being. There's a reason why I'm in nature so much. So here are the things that you can do to make this better. When your friends of color tell you that they feel like something is racist or are sharing an experience that was painful or scary for them, listen. Don't tell them how they should feel about the situation or how they should have reacted. It's really insulting, honestly. Just listen. And in fact, just regardless of whatever you're talking about, active listening is such an important skill to develop. Become self-aware. We all have our prejudiced or even racist thoughts, regardless of our color. Like, I've heard Black people say some things, okay, and Asians and what have you. We all have our moments. But becoming self-aware of those biases helps us to manage them before they negatively affect someone else. People of color, I call to you to understand that some of your white friends might be struggling with how to have these conversations and genuinely want to be a part of the solution. It could be really scary for them to step up and be bold in this way for the first time. Give them some grace and understand that they're going to make mistakes during the process. Like, no one gets it right the first time. I just need to see that you're trying and you're there, okay? But speak up so that they don't make those bad mistakes again. Example would be, friends don't let white friends touch Black friends' hair. And I was talking to someone about this. I was like, the thing is, because I grew up in white neighborhoods, white people always touch each other's hair. It's like a thing. Like, they just do this, okay? Black people are the opposite about that. But if I let people touch my hair and never said anything, and then they touch someone else's hair and that person punched them, that's kind of on me because I didn't say anything. So I like never had these incidents. I had maybe two, but things came up. I said something, okay? Because people aren't mind readers, all right? So you have to have those candid conversations with your friends who are not Black, okay? So if they're Latina, if they're, you know, Asian, if they're whatever, and they're not Black and vice versa, have the conversations and be unwilling to let things slide. I think part of the problem that we're having is a lot of people let shit slide. You can't do that. You have to say stuff. And it doesn't have to be like, you know, intense. Like, a lot of times I do it in a funny way because I'm just like, I don't have energy to tap into an angry feeling about this. And a lot of times because I use humor, it's the lesson learned sticks with people longer because they don't feel attacked. And just like, I don't want to be attacked, I don't want to attack other people. So just give people some grace, at least, like, be excited that they're showing up. Remember, actions matter more than words, and so does your inaction. What you do when I am not in the room, when people are making jokes and comments about people of color or, you know, someone who has a disability or whatever, poor people, that says a lot about you. Okay. When people are making shitty comments online, people that you know, what will you do? Will you say nothing and be complicit because it's hard to stand up for people who aren't there, or you just don't feel like dealing with it? How do you think I feel? Do you think I'm excited to have all this stuff happening and always have to, you know, interact and interject and say stuff? I don't enjoy that, but I do because I feel like I have to. Be patient with one another. This is quite honestly a lifetime of conversations. Oh, and I should also say, if you take the route of inaction, that's the easy way out versus doing the heavy lifting, which is hard. And when you do the heavy lifting, what I mean is some of your actions might lose you people, like friends and family. And sometimes doing the right thing is that's the result, okay? Connect people with opportunities that help grow their income and livelihoods. Like, connect them with opportunity. Become a personal and professional mentor. I mentor people as often as I can on different things, okay? It's so important to me. It's also why I keep talking about money. If you're a cop, get rid of the racists who've embedded themselves into the force and embrace community policing endeavors which work. We all know that there are a lot of racists who have gotten into policing. It's a thing, policing and into the armed forces, that kind of thing. The other thing is we are not represented as people of color at the same numbers in those fields. So if you feel compelled to keep the peace because you want people to see people like you, people like them helping the community, then become a police officer with the intention of doing better than the people before you. Write testimonials, or better yet, record video testimonials for a product, good, or service that a person of color friend is selling. that person could also do the same for your business. So, you know, at the end of the day, it's all about, it's not just about equality. It's about opportunity and money. Like, how can I bring more into my life so I can better my life? What has encouraged me during this really, really dark time? The line of white women who used their privilege and stood in front of Black protesters arm in arm so that the Black protesters wouldn't be harmed by the police. This happened in Louisville, Kentucky. I get chills just thinking about it. Okay. That's what it means to be an ally, that they physically put themselves in front of Black protesters because they knew the police would not harm them. The police who marched with protesters, this actually happened in a number of cities. And it was incredible because that communicates that they are trying to be better. The Black men who protected a police officer who got separated from other officers, they protected his life. He could have been beaten to death. He could have been, like, things could have gone really wrong. And they protected him. And I hope he remembers that for the rest of his life because he has it because of them. Again, the Denver protester who called out that person who was defacing the Indian statue in front of the Colorado State Capitol. The often painful conversations and revelations that have been shared during this time. We can't keep these things to ourselves. The actions that other people have taken. Actions. Speaking up, shutting things down, and being all in. No more just flapping your lips to just flap your lips. All of the love that has been sent my way from friends of all colors who have checked on me during this really scary time and that I've also checked on. And it reminds me that I've chosen well and that I've been right to have the hard conversations with a lot of people in my life. You have to figure out the answer to the following question. How does someone else doing well affect me? Because that's also at the heart of a lot of the things that people are doing to keep Black people down. Like, what about me doing well affects you? You might even want to figure out why, like, if you have a racist meemaw or like people in your family that are low key, like, oh, this Black people is Hispanics, blah, they're making comments. Ask them that question. What is it about them being equal that affects you? And I think you'll be very surprised by what they have to say. And it's important for you to be informed on technology and the nature of work. I can't do an episode like this without talking about technology. So about once a year for the past 8 years that I've blogged, I tend to have a moment where I get worked up about technology and its effect on humanity. And at times I feel like the crazy person with a tinfoil hat raving about technology. Then I'll end up writing a huge post about it or record a podcast and then move on. The coronavirus has accelerated a trend that has been happening for years. More and more people are being displaced by technology and businesses' continuous search for efficiency. We are all adapting to this shift. Think about your daily life. I'll share mine. Before Corona, I stopped going to the mall regularly. I now regularly shop online for clothing, shoes, etc. I ordered meal kits, you know, occasionally and ordered groceries online, you know, fairly frequently. This means that I'm not using cashier or restaurant services. I didn't go to the bank from March until the end of May. And when I went to the bank, I only went to the ATM. I didn't go inside the branch because I would have had to make an appointment. Now consider what has happened now since COVID has hit. It will take me months before I eat inside a restaurant, but I will eat on a patio or order a meal for pickup. Now multiply this action by hundreds of customers. These actions will eliminate jobs even as some restaurants rebound. I've made the switch to ordering 95% of what I use online. Milk products, groceries, clothing, cleaning supplies. Now multiply what I'm doing by millions of people. What is the point of me bringing this up? These changes in habits are unavoidable given what's going on with technology, but there is a cost. How people make money and spend money affects how many people are making money. And or affects how other people are making money, excuse me. The more machines can replace human activity, the more financial unrest there will be. That's something to think about. My final comment is this. I'm a fan of dystopian novels and movies. Stick with me. this will make sense in a second. If you're not sure what I'm talking about, think of books and movies such as 1984, Divergent, The Hunger Games, and Ready Player One. Not the movie, because the movie for Ready Player One really sucked. Dystopian fiction is an allegory about what is happening now or what could happen in the future. You should be very concerned because fiction has become reality in many ways, and we are all, as a collective, at risk. Thank you so much for listening to the show, and I hope that you and yours are safe and well during these difficult times.